Chances are you didn't know this. I was pretty pleased to discover it, but homecoming is a Methodist invention. Kid you not. Homecoming, by which I mean that tradition wherein schools welcome back their alumni with activities for students and alums, first took place at Southwestern University, that marvelous Methodist school down in Georgetown, on April the 21st, 1909. Baylor didn't get to it until November of that year, so at least once we beat the Baptists. Speaking of homecoming and marvelous Methodist schools, it's homecoming at Emory, which is my own alma mater. Their homecoming happens this weekend. I know that because all summer long I have been receiving invitations to come back for my own 20th class reunion. Now, homecoming is a little different at Emory because we do not have football there. So instead of going to the big game against an easy-to-beat opponent, we have to get a little creative. So in addition to the mixers and the receptions and the banquets, there is a parade and a festival and a concert featuring Sugar Ray, who I thought was a boxer, but it turns out to be a vocal group. Who knew? There will be food trucks and a book signing featuring an alumni author and a lecture by the Pulitzer Prize-winning author and historian Gary Wills, who comes to join the Emory faculty this year. Over the weekend at homecoming, you can meet the deans of the various schools, you can play in a golf tournament, you can tour the new facilities, and you can dance the night away. Of course, homecoming at Emory, like at any other college or high school, is one great big welcome back party. It's an opportunity for both students and school to say, look how much I've changed since we saw each other last. It's a chance to reconnect with classmates and friends, many of whom we have kept, others of whom have become distant as the years have gone by. Homecoming is an occasion to remember the joy of discovering poetry, or activism, or molecular physics, or different faiths. Of course, you may have discovered other less esoteric pursuits at college, and you can remember that joy as well. But at its core, homecoming is a celebration of institutional success. Homecoming says, this school took you in as a socially awkward, emotionally immature, and intellectually undisciplined freshman, and through hours of lectures and symposiums and seminars and homework and papers and exams, to say nothing of dorm life and semesters abroad and internships and office hours and maybe, just maybe, a little debauchery, this school has turned you out 4 or 5, or on the extended plan, 6 years later, as socially accomplished, emotionally developed, and intellectually curious graduates who are ready to live productive lives as workers, as readers, as scholars, as lovers, as voters, and as leaders. But homecoming is also an occasion for the home folks, the professors, and the scholars, and the teachers, and the mentors and deans, all of the people it takes to run the place, to see their students and protégés again, and learn what sort of difference it is they have made out in the world as a result of the education they have received. And in many ways, that is what today is about for us. As I look back over 10 years of our being a community of faith together, I think about all of the people, and maybe particularly the students, who have come here and learned from us, been shaped by us as they have worshiped and shared with us. Together, we have been about the project of learning what it means to be disciples of Jesus Christ. And so as I have looked back today, I am particularly proud of people like Daniel Hixon and Joel Walker and Ernest Bryson, who came here while in seminary and learned the art of leading worship as they served as lectors and liturgists. Daniel is now the pastor of United Methodist Churches in Louisiana. Joel is now an ordained deacon and a hospice chaplain. Ernest, who preached here last week, is discovering avenues of ministry with people who suffer from addictive behaviors. And I'm proud not only of them, but I'm proud of people like Stephen Kopechka and Ethan Gregory and Michael Graves, all of whom came here while undergraduates at SMU. Stephen now serves on the vestry of the Episcopal Church in Washington, D.C., where he also helps to lead that church's discipleship program. Ethan is enrolled at Perkins, and he also serves as student pastor to the First United Methodist Church of Ferris down in Ellis County. Michael has just started the Master of Religious Leadership program at the Candler School of Theology, where he is preparing to lead ministries of justice and peace building and conflict transformation as a layperson. And as much as I celebrate them and others who have been here, today isn't simply about the past. It's also very much about the present. For it's about people like Trey Burns and Rebecca Rochte and Charles Winslow and Rachel Roberts and others who are even now preparing for their own ministries. Our community then, as you will have observed, has served as a teaching congregation for students like Daniel and Ernest and Rachel and Ramsey Patton, who began to hone the craft of preaching in this very pulpit. And in acknowledging these students and their role in our community, I would be remiss not to celebrate the role played by faculty members at the Perkins School of Theology, people like the Reverend Dr. Mark Stamm, who has often served as preacher and celebrant and worship leader in addition to being a member of this community, as is Dr. Natalia Maranjuk, who is both new to the faculty and to our community. Bill Lawrence and Ted Campbell have preached in this pulpit. I've even been known to invite some non-Perkins faculty, namely one Dr. Maria Dixon Hall, my favorite professor, as preacher in this pulpit. I appreciate all of them and the words that they have brought over the years, and I hope that you do as well. They aren't our only worship leaders, of course. I am grateful to that committed group of servants listed in your bulletin who serve on the Altar Guild to set up our worship space, and to those dedicated people who serve as ushers who welcome you into this worship space. I'm grateful to Tom and to Ugana and to Jared and to Blake and to Lewis and to Rachel who read the lessons and serve the Eucharist with me. I'm thankful for Aaron and Seth and Austin and Lucinda who sing inspiring music. I'm thankful to Gordon and to Larry and a host of other people who have played the organ, all of them under the leadership of Chris Brunt, whose 10 years of service I want to acknowledge with gratitude. Together, all of these leaders make our worship service the unique experience that it is. But most of all, my friends, I am grateful for you. For we cannot send students out into the world. We can't prepare young people for ministry. We can't be the church that God calls us to be without the home folks. Those of you who worship here week after week, who by your singing and praying and listening and serving, live out the life of the gospel. It is you, you who sit in the pews and stand to sing the hymns and say the creed, you who kneel to pray and to receive the Eucharist, who give my ministry meaning. It is your gifts, your pledges, and your tithes. It is what you place in the plate and what you commit to the vision for change that changes the world. Your gifts build schools and run health clinics and stock food banks and offer scholarships. Your prayers reach the ears of God and touch the lives of others. Your hours of service in our community mean that the hungry are fed and the lonely are visited and the illiterate are taught and the despairing see a ray of hope. And yet, as much as today is about celebrating the past and acknowledging the present, it is also very much about the future. For God is very much about the business of seeking out and saving the lost. Homecoming is always an occasion to welcome back friends and students in the school of discipleship. But we're always trained for that work of collaborating with God in seeking out and searching for those who are lost. Many of us here may not think that we're terribly lost. We can navigate the halls of this church or the halls of the campus next door or the hallways in our homes and offices and playgrounds. But there are many who are lost. Lost in the overwhelming tide of today's world that would take us in so many different directions. Lost to the false gods that want our loyalty. Lost in schedules that are crammed full of activities because those activities promise to fulfill our most basic needs. The joy is that God comes to seek and to save each and every one of us. And heaven goes wild when the lost are returned. There's more joy in heaven over one who returns safe and secure. The heavens simply go wild at the prospect that one who is lost and afraid and alone has come home. Today, my friends, it is good that we are home. Good that we remember our past with thanksgiving. Good that we acknowledge what God is doing among us today. And good to give God thanks that in God's grace we're each invited to seek out and to save the lost.